It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 420 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special treat. It's the return of creator Nathan Luth. You may remember I've spoken with him in the past about Impure Blood, a series that he's co-creator of, and one that I really fell in love with. A strong female lead, gorgeous art, fantastic facial expressions, and action sequences, what's not to like? He's got a Kickstarter going on right now, and he's putting the series in the ultimate deluxe format it deserves, which is landscape mode instead of like a regular comic, which is in portrait. We talk about the series and what this Kickstarter means, since it's the first of four volumes that we'll be getting. We also talk about what he's up to, as well as Nadia, his significant other, the talented writer and co-creator who also made Impure Blood possible. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show.
Tell me, what do you know of the ancients?
I know that compared to ancients, humans are weak, pitiful creatures. The ancients defended humanity against the black armies of Elhender, and in thanks, humans betrayed, hunted, and murdered them. In an effort to prevent their extinction, the ancients mixed their blood with humans. But it didn't help. There are no true ancients left. Only a few scattered half-breeds. Like me. The ancients are dead.
You're wrong. There is still one true ancient left.
After being freed from captivity by a mysterious young lady, a half-human gladiator finds himself bound to her mission to track down the last full-blooded member of his ancient mystical race before an army of monsters can beat them to it.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Nathan Luth, one of the great creators behind Impure Blood, one of those books that is what stands out in my mind as one of those great storytelling volumes. And you've got a Kickstarter going on for it, Nathan. Why don't we jump right to that and talk about what's going on with your Kickstarter?
Yes. After 10 years of trying to figure out what to do with Impure Blood, we're finally launching a Kickstarter for a 1,000 copy hardcover run that is horizontally bound. Fans of the series know that it's a landscape format, and kind of we've been doing print on demand. But we couldn't find a printer that would bind it horizontally. So we've just been, the way we solved that problem was to flip all the pages 90 degrees counterclockwise. So the reader is basically looking at a calendar and flipping through a calendar style, like a calendar. But now we're finally launching a Kickstarter so we can get it an offset print run, get it horizontally bound. It's going to be a beautiful hardcover edition, and I could not be more excited about this. This is kind of how I've always envisioned it being. So to actually have the opportunity to bring that into existence has been, I couldn't be more excited about it.
Because if you look at the Kickstarter, and if it's Impure Blood Volume 1 of 4, so all
That's
four
correct.
Volumes will be in there. But if you go there, you'll see an image of what it looks like. Which, when I saw that, I went, oh, wow, I have to have that. So I immediately pledged to get that because I love the story. You know, we've talked about this previously, but I just, it's been a little while, so people may not have heard that episode. So we'll talk a little bit about that so people can get into it. But as I was saying before we started to record, I love books sometimes that are in different formats than what I'm used to. Mouse Guard is one of the best examples of that. When I saw it, you know, some of us struggled to get things to be able to store them into, you know, bags and boards and stuff like that, because it wasn't right. You couldn't get that very easily at that time. But I think things have improved along those lines. But this book, I'm going to put in my cabinet where I keep all the great stuff that I want to keep forever. So whenever I feel like it, I can pull it out and dive right into it.
High praise indeed.
So good. And that, of course, this is one of four, so this will be the first.
Do you have an idea about like how often you're going to be Kickstartering? Because you're probably going to... I just noticed on the Kickstarter, there's this wonderful picture of people looking at it, looking at the book, and they're having to turn it sideways.
Yeah, exactly. It shows exactly what we're talking about. But yes, we want to keep rolling with this. My goal here is to get this out over the course of the next 2 years. So volume one... Kickstarter running right now. Volume two, I'm hoping to launch that September, October of 2020. Then likewise, February 2021 for volume three, and then autumn 2021 for volume four.
Okay, and the important thing we got to say is that the Kickstarter, although you're at the time we're recording it, you're more than halfway there, which is a great thing. And hopefully by the time this post, maybe you've already gotten there and you're going to be into stretch goals or you're close to it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's gonna. The Kickstarter concludes on Thursday, March the 5th at 12:59 a.m. Eastern Time.
March 4th. I don't want people thinking they have an extra day or anything like that.
Because it says 5th on there, but well.
Does it?
Yeah, it says on the Kickstarter, Thursday, March 5th, 12:59 a.m. March 4th. We'll go by what you say because that's the important thing. We don't want to be late and miss it. So
I might have messed that up. I was going for starts on 02/02/2020 and then it ends on 03/04.
Numbers.
It's my first Kickstarter. It's my first Kickstarter. I'll figure it out. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? The thing of it is, of course, that's Eastern Standard Time. It's going to end in your part of the world on the 4th. So. That's the thing. That's why at 12:59 a.m. is a little late. So don't wait until that time, Eastern time. Go ahead and do it on the 4th so you don't miss it.
I'm not going to be available. I'm going out for a beer afterwards. So.
Well, it's just this book. We should talk a little bit about it because some people may not have been around when we talked about it the first time. So we want to get in and discuss it. Now, this was put together by you and your significant other. Talk about her and her involvement and how the two of you did this.
That's right. When we first got together, we were just boyfriend and girlfriend. We got together and my now wife, Nadia Bear, she was a writer hobbyist. She'd had this epic fantasy novel that she'd been kicking around in her head since high school. And while we both love the fantasy, the European medieval fantasy style, it's been done quite a bit, even at that point. This was back in 2009, of course. We were just kind of becoming aware of the steampunk movement at that time. And so we were like, hey, let's throw a bit of a twist on this. Let's make it steampunk. And thus, Impure Blood was born. It is a steam fantasy epic, I like to sell it as.
Okay. Well, let me read the paragraph that you have on the Kickstarter page because I think it does a really good job of telling what the story is. It says, dubbed the Abomination because of his appearance, enslaved gladiator Roan, am I pronouncing that right, R-O-A-N, Roan?
Roan, yeah.
Okay, carries within his human body the blood of a mystical and nearly extinct race known as the Ancients. He jumps at the prospect of freedom when a mysterious girl named Dara, how do you pronounce that?
We usually go with Dara,
appears at his cell and offers him a chance at a new life in exchange for his help. Together with the aristocratic Caspian, roguish Elnor, and grease monkey Mac, they embark on a mission to track down an artifact that Dara believes may be connected to Roan's ancient impure blood. And that's the description.
Title drop. There. Yes, thank you.
It's really nicely done. I think I saw you guys, if I remember correctly, at a convention.
I was going to say, was that C2E2 where we first met you?
I think so. I think it's in that part of the country where I saw it.
Definitely.
And the artwork was good. Now, she's the writer and you're the artist as this goes, because you're both co-creators as far as this stuff goes.
But
as far as like when I saw the art, and of course, you know, art always gets people's eye, and then it's a story that keeps you. But when I saw the art, I said, man, I got to have a look at this. This is great stuff.
Thank you.
I think I got the first volume, if I remember correctly, and then after that I kept keeping up with it because I really liked it. And I'll tell somebody right now, it ends well. If you ever worry about this, I always worry because sometimes, I'm sorry, Marvel, but you have these epic things that go on and they just sputter to a close. Yours does not do that. It's a really great story, well told, and it comes to a really good ending. I was very satisfied with the ending, and I'm so often disappointed.
Thank you very much. The ending was very important to us. From the first 10 pages, we talked about it and we decided that, this is going to end. We're not going to just keep dragging this out as long as we possibly could. This needs to have some kind of conclusion to build towards because we had both had plenty of, other franchises that, didn't quit on a high note or didn't quit with their head. And so you get those kind of later seasons or those later issues where it's just kind of, peters out and you're just kind of like, okay, everybody, it kind of became clear that everybody was still, on board for the paycheck at that point. So, we did not want that to happen. We wanted, we wanted, as you say, to end strong. We wanted to have a clear destination in mind. And, Nadia, did a marvelous job of, pointing all the plot threads to the epic conclusion. So thank you very much. That was quite intentional, and I'm glad it came across.
It was just such a great thing. Now, one of the things I want to talk about, and you mentioned this on the Kickstarter page as well, is that this was originally a finalist in DC's webcomic talent search, which was called Zuda. Talk about that. Talk about all that experience.
That was one of those things that should have been a learning experience, but we were young and naive kids way back in the far flung year of 2009. Zuda is actually it's actually kind of Zuda's fault that it is horizontally oriented, or possibly my own laziness. That was the format that they wanted it in. Because everybody was reading their webcomics on their desktop computers at the time. So the way they wanted it formatted was horizontally. Interestingly enough, it was a good experience overall. And it was very flattering to be included in the finalists. And I honestly don't even remember what beat us at this point. It's been, as I mentioned, it was back in 2009. It was kind of our first experience in rallying our friends and family and audience. And there were some lessons that I wish I had taken earlier in regards to that, but now it's kind of all coming back around. In hindsight, I am kind of glad that we didn't win because then we probably wouldn't be here on Kickstarter or probably would who knows? I honestly don't know what became of the properties that did win in Zuda or if DC still has the license to those and they can't use them or anything, something like that. So maybe I should ask.
Well, of course, webcomic is the key to this whole thing. But that's why they wanted them that way. That because that's, as you say, there are a lot of webcomics going around these days. But, my biggest problem is I don't have the time to get to them. I'm so busy reading comics that it's hard for me to get on the computer and read stuff like that. So, but the interesting thing, now, what did you submit to Zuda? Was it the first volume? Was it a part of it? How did you do that?
The first 8 pages, I think it was page 1 through 8. So I remember that the last page was, that one where they're all running off into the night, with the full moon, up behind them. And it's kind of a low angle. It was a good hook. I was hooked at that point and, one of the funny things I like to joke about, but it's true, is that I, the artist and a husband to the writer, had no idea where the story was going. Yeah. So I was kind of following along page by page as I was drawing it. and getting slipped into the story myself. So I kind of knew, but Nadia played it very close to the chest, even with me. So so I kind of got to have those initial reactions to what was happening in the story and then translate them onto the page.
That's cool, because I've got to tell you this. I'm the editor of an indie book called, well, it's not indie anymore. It's picked up by Scout Comics. It's called Stabbity Bunny. And the creator and writer, he doesn't tell me much as to what's happening. For the same thing, when I read the script, I can give him feedback. You know, I can, as I read it, I can say, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. Or, you know, this is kind of, and I'm fascinated to see, just like him, I want to see how the artist puts it onto the page, because, you know, it's it's such an interesting process. It's so much fun, you know, because everybody is so used to seeing the completed project, the completed issues. But you don't, it's a different experience, and that's what you guys have gone through to build it.
Most definitely. I also learned very early on to keep my mouth shut about what I thought should happen, or to speculate about what was going to happen, because, writers don't like it if you try to tell them how the story ought to go. So it was better just for everyone involved if I was just, kept my mouth shut and went along for the ride.
Well, it's been fun, though, to, you know, when you read the script and then you got to translate. Honestly, I do get that sense of excitement that you had about the story, because the artwork really flows dynamically as it goes along. There's two things in artwork I always, when I write reviews, talk about. It's the expressions and the action sequences. If you get those down right, then I think your book is going to be a success. And from the moment I saw yours, I got those things. I was able to, even the people who are ancients and people who are, you know, different kinds of people, the expressions were such that you could understand immediately what they were thinking and feeling.
Thank you very much. That was a challenge, especially with, that was one of the biggest challenges from the get-go, was Roan, to make him both monstrous but also relatable at the same time. So to ground him a little bit, and then I use my experience with him, and to kind of, you know, spill over into all the other ancients and, you know, make them also relatable. So good. Excellent.
And of course, the other part, there is a sequence, and I don't think it happens in the first volume, I think it's volume 4, is where she kind of lets you go and let you do your battle sequences, you know, without a whole lot of dialogue. And it was fun to read, because as much as Spider-Man goes over, I don't think people, when they're fighting, launch quips all the time. I think you're busy trying to save yourself and take out the enemy and stuff. So you're not busy being funny, you know, you're busy taking on the people. So there's a several page sequence that I really enjoyed, because, you know, I remember reading that and just going, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And, you know, I got to go along visually for that part of the book. I thought that was a nice change of pace for it. I really liked that.
Well, thank you so much.
Because, you know, it's rare in comics that you read that.
Yeah. Let's see. I always kind of agreed with you. And as you were saying that, I was actually relating to one of my big influences for action scenes was actually Mark Bagley in Spider-Man, some good old 90s Spider-Man. And I think the first time that I actually stood up and took notice of a choreographed fight scene was in Revenge of the Spider-Slayers. And Spider-Man is fighting this giant bird robot in Central Park. And a 14-year-old me was like, wait a minute, I can, like, this makes sense. You know, I can follow the direction of things. Like, I could map this out in my head. Like, first they go this way, then they go that way, and it kind of made sense, like in a three-dimensional, like if I imagined it three-dimensionally. So that's something that I kind of carried forward with me. And also as a martial artist myself, keeping track of how fights flow and how they move back and forth is important to me, and something that I try to translate onto the page.
Well, perspective is a big deal because, you know, if somebody punches somebody or somebody stabs somebody or hits somebody, the way that you portray it, the perspective that it happens in, is often one of the most important choices you can make. Really good. So I always thought you did a good job with that. You know, not only in that one sequence, but all the way along, there's a lot of dynamic motion happening. You know, I've got to ask you one thing, because as my experience with comics always kind of takes me to this. The dialogue and putting it on the page, was that something that was easy for you? Because sometimes, you know, artists get lost in the making the picture happen, and you don't realize that there's going to be a word balloon on top of something.
Right.
Was that easy for you, or was that something that took a little while to get used to?
That is something that I was conscious of. I have had formal comics training. Knowing that the eye is naturally drawn to text and would naturally be drawn to the next closest text bubble, was something that I was very conscious of. So I kind of built the pages both with that in mind. I built the composition of the page around the flow of the word balloons. Basically the word balloons, that's a kind of a fancy way of saying, basically I put in the word balloons first and then drew the pictures around it. And I am primarily a digital artist, so being able to nudge things around, adjust the sizes of characters in relation to the balloons, and I use that very tight control that the computer gives you over, you know, your layout and your sketching phase, to my advantage in that way.
That's interesting, because not everybody does that. I forget, did you letter it as well as do the artwork?
I did. Lettering and, pretty much everything was me except for the flat colors. We hired on a lovely young lady by the name of Samantha Summers, who assisted me with flatting out the colors, so I could have a Saturday occasionally and relax.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to do that. You got to recharge the battery so you can get back there and dive into again. I just thought the art was, as I said, dynamic. It was the thing that got me. When I first looked at it, I knew this was going to be a story I was going to want to read. You know, like I said, you got to get people's attention, and the artwork is usually the way you do it. You don't know what the story's going to be until you actually start to read, unless you read like a paragraph and there's some interesting things going on about it. But with that, I wasn't sure what the story was going to be. Now, I've got to bring up one thing that I always like to talk about, is I think you guys were ahead of the game to some degree about having a female lead character.
Oh, yes. Definitely thank Nadia for that one. She was not huge into the comics when we first met. And I think one of her very first observations was exactly that there's not a lot of strong female protagonists in the field. And I had always been a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I think at the time Battlestar Galactica. So she was like, we want to do strong female protagonists. And I was like, yes, we do. so that was never really any question between us. And Dara, our main character, our heroine protagonist, has been immensely popular. Actually, she's probably we have bookmarks as incentive giveaways on the table whenever we're at convention, and people just hands down always like we have all the five main characters, each with their own bookmark, all sitting next to each other, and people just like more often than not will pick Dara over the other cast. So she's cool, she's competent, a little bit vulnerable sometimes, but all around a cool action girl.
Which I like. I mean, you know, I think she was one of the very first ones that stood out in my reading as far as a woman lead that was, you know, I hate to say it, sometimes there are traps writers fall into with female characters. And yours did not fall into any of those traps. And I remember really thinking, this is what I want to see in the future from comics with lead female characters.
Right. And I owe that entirely to having a female writer to work with and work for. For my part, I basically just tried to not have her do sexy poses all the time. I tried to come at it more from how would I stand in this scene as opposed to, you know, how would a pinup model stand in this scene?
Well, she looked realistic too. That was the thing. Not only did she act that way, she looked like a real woman would look like, you know, not shall we say the buxom kind that we often see. I just got done reading a book, considering doing an interview, and I you know, there's two outstanding characteristics on every woman. I was just like, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I kind of like a little more realistic.
Right. Right.
So that was one of the things I noticed about your art was that with her character, was that she looked like, you know, she could pop off the page and be a real person in my mind.
Yeah. In fact, we have had a friend and fan and cosplayer dress up as her. She and her husband and friend dressed up as Dara, Caspian, and Mac, and did a photo shoot. And one of the photos that they took is a mini print that's available on the Kickstarter. So they did an amazing job. I think there's some pictures from that on my Instagram at Nathan Luth Illustration, and also her Instagram, which is euphoria.bjc. So you're 100% right. And that was, again, another thing that was important, to have these characters look like they could, to be semi-grounded in reality, despite their, you know, somewhat fantastical and supernatural nature sometimes. I wanted these costumes to look like things that people would, you know, conceivably just wear around, and not be like, don't get me wrong, I love a lot of RPG stuff, but some of it is just kind of like, well, you see people trying to dress up like it at, like some of these characters at comic conventions, and you can tell that they're just super uncomfortable and whatever piece of their costume is kind of in the process of falling off all the time. So in my character design and in my costume designs, I always try to have a mind for functionality.
Yeah. I remember when the Batgirl costume came out, the one that was sort of realistic, like.
Yes, the leather jacket and everything.
Yeah, and the boots and all that kind of stuff. Stuff you could buy and put together, which I thought was cute. You reminded me of something, though. It's funny how this all ties to Mouse Guard in my head. I was talking.
Everything ties back to Mouse Guard.
Somehow it does, because I remember when I first saw that in the previews, I said, I have to have that book. Because, you know, mice, I don't like them when they're anthropomorphic. This was like little mice as if they could stand up, but they weren't going to look like Mighty Mouse kind of stuff.
Right.
And so I just loved it. And I was talking to him at a convention, and I turned around as I was looking, as talking to David, and people came up cosplaying his characters. And I remember telling him, I said, you know, you've arrived when people cosplay your characters in your book.
Yes.
And so I was thinking about that with you guys, too. I'm sure that's not the only time. You probably have seen some others in your time.
Not enough. The more the merrier. They were definitely the first. And since we're friends, I was very, very pleased to include them in the Kickstarter. But, anytime anybody wants to come up and cosplay as the Impure Bloodcast, I would be delighted, and you would most likely get lots of hugs and fist bumps and free stuff from my table if I sell you to convention doing that. So
something to keep in mind.
There you go.
Which, of course, leads to another question. If we're going to see you, which conventions are you guys going to be at? You have to say Nadia hi for me.
She's
going to be here apparently tonight. So which conventions are you going to be at, the two of you going to be at? Because 2020 is just getting gearing up.
Oh, it is.
What kind of things you guys going to be up to?
Let's see. Coming up just here in the month of February, we're doing Con of the North and MarsCon here in Minneapolis. After that, we're going to be down at Planet Comic-Con in March. Grand Comic-Con in Omaha, Nebraska. No, and Grand, it's in Nebraska. I'm pretty sure it's in Nebraska.
Okay.
Let's see. Then in, sadly, not making it to C2E2 this year. I don't think they like us anymore. I'm being a little jokey. But let's see. After that, and then after that, in May, we're going to be at SpringCon. So we're bopping around. We'll be available, and you can absolutely find us on the Kickstarter for at least until March 4th or possibly 5th.
Depending on the time zone, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So this brings up another thing to me. This book would make an ideal animated movie. It really would, and I would love to see that. And the era where Netflix is doing all these animated things and all this stuff, man, I would love to see this on Netflix.
That is most definitely – I would sign on to that dream. I'll sign off on that. His Dark Materials, like a miniseries. I'd be down for that. Okay. All right. I'll get to animating.
Yeah, well, because I would love to. This just screams that to me when I'm reading it. Because literally, the way that you draw is such that the motion from one panel to another feels like it's flowing, just like an animation would do.
Thank you.
I love that because I've seen some where it looks like. Well, I'll tell a story about Todd McFarlane. When he was drawing Spider-Man, what he would do is he would draw pictures of Spider-Man, and this is the story. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know, but he would fling them up in the air, and the order they fell to the ground is how he would write the story.
Is that?
I don't know. I
believe it. That explains a lot. He was kind of responsible for the whole put up by the ear Spider-Man poses.
That's right. He could put his toe in his ear stuff.
Right.
I never got to, but I saw that someplace and I said, it does explain a lot.
I'll buy it.
See, yours,
I don't know if it's true, but it's true enough.
Your story is such that it moves organically in my head, which is something that I always love. If it's still pictures, then I lose interest in the story because there is no movement. But to me, your stuff just really flows, and so I like that. Her story combined with your artwork is just golden in my mind.
Thank you.
Something great. Which leads me to a question. Of course, you've got this good thing going on. Mm-hmm. I know you guys have done other projects that I've read in the past. Mm-hmm. Are there stuff? Well, first thing, let's say, how do we access your things? Let's say, of course, we want to go to the Kickstarter to get Impure Blood, and you want to be able to get the hardcovers in the proper format. But other stuff you've done, how do people get a hold of those wonderful books?
You can visit my portfolio site, NathanLuthIllustration.com. That's NathanLuethIllustration.com illustration.com. As far as other books, I am an Amazon search away. You can find pretty much everything I've ever done on Amazon. So if you search my name, again, last name, Luth. It is that simple. There's a few other Nathan Luths out there, but I think one is a police officer and the other is an architect in Colorado. So not those guys.
That's funny. When I go on to Skype and stuff like that, sometimes I have trouble finding the right person. You know, Twitter too. I struggle. You know, I always try to put the proper links out, and every once in a while I grab the wrong guy, and they say, "That's not me. What are you doing?"
I have to
change it and stuff like that. So, what about Facebook?
I have been blessed with this in my distinct name. So.
Well, good. Well, that's good. That stands out. So, let me ask you then. Nadia was, when I talked with you guys last, I kind of remember she was in the middle of writing science fiction novels.
She has been working on an urban fantasy series about vampires called Redemption, part of the Eternal Watch series. I'm not entirely sure how that's going. And another thing you learn about writers is you never ask them how it's going. by and large, she is a intellectual property lawyer by day. And I think that is keeping her pretty busy. So,
not a bad thing.
So,
are you guys working on any other projects together, or are you guys kind of? She's doing her kind of things, and you're supporting her, but doing your own things as well.
Absolutely. Emotionally, I'm supporting her emotionally. Purely emotionally. I'll be clear on that. But yeah, no. For the time being, I think we are working on different projects. She's got things that she's interested in doing. I've got things I'm interested in doing. As I mentioned, the last Impure Blood a deluxe edition is coming out at the end of 2021. And I have another comic idea that I would like to, that I've been cooking in my head since high school. And I finally like to bring to fruition. So that is the direction that I am heading. And as mentioned, she is leading into novels, I think.
Very good. Now, there's one other thing that you guys could work on together as a return to the Impure Blood universe. Is that possible?
We get asked about that a lot. I am totally in favor of it. I am tentatively and trying to delicately bug Nadia about that. Hopefully with the fantastical, amazing success of the Kickstarter, I think that would provide some extra incentive towards that. But yeah, no, I would love that. I would be so down for that, because 2 years after production wrapped on this thing, I'm kind of starting to do, I've kind of been doing some promotional art for the Kickstarter, of course. And it kind of just all came back to me, like just little nuances of each of these characters, like the details, like it was just like riding a bike. And I was like, oh man, I miss drawing all the scars on Roan. so I'm down. I have ideas, which, as I mentioned, is kind of can kind of be dangerous. I think like a 5 years or 10 years later thing would be interesting to see what happened to all the characters and how the world has changed, and are ancients any more accepted in society than they have been previously. I think that would be interesting. I think you and Nadia were on one side of this and I was on the other side of this. I actually think like a prequel series would be interesting. Like a hundred years before, like kind of, show how the ancients and humans fell out and, kind of became enemies. I think that would be interesting, like I said, I have ideas. I kind of want to poke the bear about this a little bit. Haha. Yeah, because that is what name is Bear. I'm not sure how much I can or cannot book the bear on this. So, but yes, I would love that. I think a lot of our fans would love that. I just need to get Nadia on board but I don't think it's impossible. It's impossible. We'll leave it at that.
Well, you know, we're out here ready when you guys are ready. It shouldn't happen until you guys are ready.
Right.
You know, because Impure Blood shows what can happen when you guys are really on the same page and doing, you know, creative stuff in the same, you know, doing things together like that. I think that's just a wonderful thing. I really, really loved it. Yeah. So now the thing of it is those kinds of things. So other projects that you're working on, you can't really talk about at this point. Is that what I hear you saying?
Unfortunately, not a lot. I'm working on most of what I do otherwise is client work. So it's projects that are not owned by me, which is the other reason that I want to get Impure Blood successful on Kickstarter is to kind of start transitioning more into my independent comic work and to make that a viable revenue stream and a viable to start being able to make a viable living off of independently publishing comics.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's a great thing if you can accomplish it. You know, wonderful thing because it frees you up to be creative and do the kinds of things you want to do.
Exactly.
Which is so worth it. Now, I did want to talk a little bit about the different rewards that you could do. You can even put a dollar down if you want to. And it'll even get you a social media shout-out.
That's right. Toss a coin to your sketcher. let's see. We have rewards ranging all the way from $1 to $10,000. As you mentioned, the lowest possible reward is $1. You get a social media shout-out and a free desktop or phone background for featuring the Impure Blood characters. $10, you get all that, a PDF of Volume 1 and your name on the backer page. $20 and $30, you start getting options for the mini prints. We have mini prints from several awesome other artist friends of mine. I have an original mini print in there, but then Bridget Ruya, the cosplayer I mentioned, one of her photos is in there, along with Fanula Wilman out of Denver, and Eric Larvold, a buddy of mine from college, who's really killing it on Instagram. And then, of course, at $40, you actually get the book that's shipping included. And again, I think you will be, anybody who gets that will be very, very pleased with it. I've put a lot of thought and effort and research into making this the best possible book that I can.
Well, the one that I signed up for, I get the social media shout out too. I also get a sign and a sketch according to what it says. And there's all kinds of wonderful stuff going on with it. I won't say which one it is, but let's just say it's a good one. It's one I really like, and so I'm really looking forward to it. So it's just, I can't wait for this book to hit. And according from what I see, it looks like the books are going to arrive in August. Is that one that we're expecting them?
That's what we're shooting for. We're printing overseas. We have a Chinese printer. Hopefully the situation there doesn't get any worse, but we won't be placing our order for another 6 weeks, best case scenario. So this, it seems like things are shifting quickly there. So, hopefully things will, get resolved as quickly as they did with the SARS epidemic back in 2003. Cause that's the parallel that everybody keeps, drawing. But at any rate, Kickstarter funds lend an account, assuming we get funded, knock on wood, don't want to jinx it. Assuming we get funded, Kickstarter funds will land in, our bank account in mid-March. Everything's ready to go. So we're going to be placing the order ideally the same week that, that lands. The printer says it should be about 2 to 3 months to get them in hand, which would put us in, June. But you know, you want to include like a month just to, you know, cause life and stuff happens. So, we're shooting for August at the latest, hopefully July, August at the latest.
Okay, cool. That'd be a good thing. It's like Scotty used to do on Star Trek, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead and say, that's how I maintain my reputation as a miracle worker. He would set expectations low and he would, beat them.
So
good stuff. So one other thing I think people might want to be aware of is the fact that people ask why people set the goals the way that they do. And if people look, you have a pie chart that tells what's going on. And it's interesting, and this is so true of Kickstarters, is printing and shipping is is the very biggest thing, because that's where the money is needed to make things happen.
It's true. And that's kind of the name of the game, unfortunately. Books per unit get cheaper the more you order, and I'm sure you know, but your audience may not know, that printing in bulk is kind of the way you have to do it if you hope to have a profitable product. So our printing and shipping costs, we're estimating at around $4,000. Our total funding goal is $7,500. Printing and shipping costs, we're estimating at about $4,000. That's just to get the books from China, the printer in China, to the port of Minneapolis. Then, of course, we have to mail them from our house to all the backers. So that's going to be another 20% of our funding total. Kickstarter and the credit card companies take about 10%. Cost of actually running the campaign is probably about another 10%. And then this being our first real foray into self-publishing and stuff like that, we're buying a package of ISBN numbers. So that's the smallest cost there. So yeah.
Just got to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, we have sat down with a fine-tooth comb and a calculator and crunched those teeny tiny crunchy numbers. And yes, we're fairly certain we have a workable budget here.
There's a funny little line under that pie chart. It says, I also wanted a budget for a pony, but Nadia said no.
Yeah. Maybe with volume 4. Maybe.
Yeah, add that in for the further Kickstarter and see how things go. Mm-hmm. Well, you're off to a great start, and I have to say, I'm expecting you to get stretch goals before too very long, and I bet you're going to have some really good ones as time moves forward.
Yes, in fact, I believe we just unlocked the 50% stretch goal, which will be a bundle that I'm calling the Kickstarter All Starters. So it'll feature other people who are currently running Kickstarters, and that you should totally go check out. So an ad for that. And that'll be going for the rest of the campaign, at least until we hit 75%.
Yeah, well, it's great stuff. I can't wait to have these. These are just going to be wonderful. Wonderful things in my library to be able to read. So if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend you do it. You can read some of the web comics ahead of time, but I would recommend get the book. You can see them for free, and that's great, but don't spoil the book, because the book, that's the way I did it. I read the book and I really enjoyed it that way. So hey. I would recommend that very highly. So it's good stuff. So, Nathan, you guys are doing wonderful stuff, and I'm looking forward to more good things from you in the future. I can't wait to have them. When I get the fourth one, I've got them all together. I'm really going to be
there
excited.
You go.
I can't wait.
And I'm already planning. The fourth one will include an option for a slip case. So just a fair wording on that one.
Ooh, I'd like that.
All right, good sign.
The stuff that I want to have good things, quality.
That's
good stuff. Well, Nathan, all I can say is keep it up, because boy, this is good reading and such a great story that I think, especially if you're interested in female lead characters like I am, this is going to be one that you just can't pass up, because it's just wonderfully done. And I just, this, all I can say is get out there and get it, and get to Kickstarter and look for Impure Blood Volume 1 of 4, and you'll find it there, and be sure to support it, because we want to see a lot more of this good stuff in the future. So keep it up, Nathan. All I can say is, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm so glad we're going to get a great volume, or several volumes of these to be able to keep.
You bet, you bet. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate your help.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.